You already knew what it was.
Talk radio.
Oh, man. Fellow Americans, it is with the utmost pride and sincerity that I present this recording as a living testament and recollection of history in the making during our generation.
Allow me to reintroduce myself.
My name is... My name is...
Dr. Dre.
Sir Robert Fortune.
Okay, we get it. Start the show.
Yeah. Yes, sir. Like we do about this time.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Talking sports with the 12th man. We always say, you know the signature, as always. On Sunday, officially talking sports with 12 minutes kicking off. I am one of the hosts, your boy Dre, as always, joined with my two fellow co-hosts who are trying to get max deal contracts, but I don't know. We'll see if they can pull that off too, man. So again, let's check in with my boys. JQ, how you doing this evening, sir?
Oh man, I can't complain. Like we were talking about, I got another day to punch the board and technically direct at the stadium for the Stripers today. It's been a good day. Ready to roll and talk some sports with my fellows. How you doing, bro?
Man, we're doing fantastic, bro. We appreciate you, man. Like I said, don't forget the little people, like we always say too, man. So we're gonna chop this up as we always do. And we got to check in with our other boy, Rob Ford, who's always sliding in under the tag, as he always does. Rob Ford, how you doing this evening, bro?
On time.
That's
doing
on
great,
time, bro.
Man. Let's get this party started. Make it do what it do.
Robert was about 2 seconds from getting that call, like he about to sleep. Go ahead, JQ.
Man, I told you it spoiled us is what it was. Just when we thought we had got him, he was to a point where he wasn't doing that no more, right back to it. Rob keeps us on our toes, boy. You gotta love it.
I was about to say, this is about to be a short show, a real short show. No, we're having fun, and Rob, and JQ, man, I don't know what happened last week, man. I think the lady, man, I don't know. You were just kind of chilling, man. So, again, we were like, man, it's all good, man. So, anyway.
No idea what happened.
It's all good. Let's get this party started, as always, to call into the show. Hopefully, my boy Tony, shout out to my boy Tony in Florida. Hopefully, you are listening in too, man. Call us in. He has some good comments on the Facebook page too, man. So, if you are calling, the number to call in, Tony, it's always 424-243-9519. Once again, 424-243-9519. Call us. Call at your boys. We have fun talking sports. Follow us on Twitter at the number 12, THMAN Sports. And last but not least, fellas, go to Facebook as Tony did. Go to Facebook.com/talkingsports for the 12th man. You will find us in that arena as well. So, anyway, gentlemen, we got a lot to talk about. Let's get this party started. And we're going to kick it off right on the baseball diamond here, and we're going to talk about the Mariners. Can they overtake the Astros in the AL West? You want to kick that one off, JQ, or you want Rob to start? I'll let you guys have a choice, man.
I can do it, and my answer is going to be no. That Houston team, you got a glimpse of it in the All-Star game with Springer and Bregman going back-to-back. Yeah, I mean, they just loaded. You talk about Verlander, you talk about Gerrit Cole, you talk about Dallas Keuchel. And they haven't got Correa back and Altuve. I mean, they just have an absolute squad. Maybe the bullpen is a little bit of a concern, but you also saw Diaz from the Mariners get roughed up a little bit too. But I just don't think the Mariners have enough. And losing Cano to that suspension is a death knell, I think, to their chances. Even if I didn't really think they had a big chance, but not having him definitely puts a big damper on it. Ability to try to catch the Astros. The Astros are just a machine right now. If they stay healthy, I just don't see them catch them. I think the Mariners can get the second wild card spot and have to play the loser of the Yankees and Red Sox, whoever doesn't win the AL East. I see that as a more realistic option for the Mariners, but I just don't see them catching the Astros.
Don't even worry about it, Mariners. Y'all just in the second street. Go ahead, Rob. What did you thought about what JQ said?
Well, the Astros are the defending world champs, and they got a really good chance to get back there again. A very deep roster, and obviously when you got some strong LSU ties on your team, you're going to have a chance to win.
No guy.
So, it's going to be really hard. And, the Mariners, if I'm not mistaken, they're about 4-6 in their last 10 games. So they've hit a little bit of a slump, and they got to watch the falling in third place with the Oakland Athletics behind them as well. So, I mean, they got to be real careful as well. But, you know, the Seattle Mariners owners, they have very deep pockets. So, you know, we'll see what they can do come the trading deadline here. Robinson Cano, as JQ just mentioned, he will be back soon from suspension. So, you know, we'll see. They're trying to acquire some talent, and they can pick up some high salary with the owners that they have, and they really can only give up some, you know, low-level prospects here. And, you know, like I said, with the deep pockets that they have, they are capable of doing that here. So, like I said, Cano is expected to be back soon. You know, there's some question marks about moving D. Gordon back to center field when he returns. So we'll see how that works when he comes back. But, you know, that's about the only hope that they have. But, I mean, I still see that being a very slim chance of them catching the Astros. And they got to watch the A's right on their tail as well.
Yeah, the only thing about that Mariners is I think they had like a Red Sox-Yankees two-step, I think, in that seven of those 10 games, if I'm not mistaken, where they just had a really tough schedule. And sometimes that happens in baseball. You catch two really good teams and you're going to back-to-back. You know, it's tough sledding, but I agree with you. I just don't see them catching the Astros.
Yeah. Astros loaded. They're doing their thing. All right, gentlemen. As much as I hate to admit our recap for the Braves at the Nationals here, just kind of sucks because a couple of games were kind of delayed due to the rain and then just didn't seem to hit their stride at all. Obviously, congrats to the Nationals, but just a quick thought about that too, Rob, and then I'll let you kind of wrap it up, JQ.
Oh, well, you know, you're the Braves fan. Let's start with your comments on it.
Yeah, man. I don't know if you're trying to, like, you know, have a nice little dig on me, man. Just, again, you know, Go ahead. No, I was just going to say, disappointing. Yeah, for me. Just as I kind of know, we're both tripping on each other here. But, yeah, just a little, you know, obviously we knew this was a pretty big series because, again, the Braves had an opportunity to kind of, like, take the claim. But, it just seemed like, you know, Nationals were kind of getting timely hits. And then, you know, Folty kind of struggled against, you know, Scherzer. And obviously Scherzer is one of the better pitchers. And then, you know, just kind of did his thing too. And then, again, we're still kind of showing what we need. And we're still going to need some bullpen help too. So hopefully there's some help. I heard some rumors that the Braves may be looking into the Orioles made a trade, obviously getting rid of Machado. And then there's also some opportunities here Britton, that's what I was looking at too. I just saw that too, as a matter of fact too. So that's something to think about as well. Thank you. I was just getting ready. I was looking that up too. Zach Britton, kind of depending on how he's going to do too, man. So again, it's just kind of a tough series, but hopefully we'll bounce back and then we're going to Miami soon here and whatnot too. So your thoughts about that, JQ?
Yeah, I mean, like we talked about earlier, a couple of days ago, the Nationals, they're back against the wall. They couldn't lose any more ground. They had to come out and have this kind of performance. So, I mean, I'm not overly surprised. And the one thing we missed when we talk about it, yeah, Folty, you know, that's tough going against Scherzer, but he had been so lights out, especially coming down the home stretch of that first half, that
confidence.
I didn't really expect that kind of outing today. Yeah. Is that not having Albies? And you look at him, you say, that little dude can't make that big of a deal in the middle of that lineup, at the beginning of that lineup, but he does. And him being out, I think, with the hamstring, you know, it hurts, and you're trying to get Acuna back from the groin. So, you know, you got some growing pains, you got some for real pains along that roster right now against your two young guys that kind of gave that team that jolt that got them going in the first half. They need to get back to that, to those two guys setting the table and getting the timely hits like you talked about that Washington was getting. So I think they'll bounce back. Miami's a good place to try to bounce back. But, again, I just think it's Washington with their backs against the wall, a proud team that came out swinging.
Yeah,
they made it to 500 today, and, you know, Bryce Harper, you know, even with his batting average this year, hit his 24th home run, you know, and Max Scherzer, obviously, is going to be tough to beat. Struck out 7 in 6 innings, and they got the 6-2 victory tonight.
Yeah. All good.
Yeah.
Hey, that's all good. I mean, you give credit where credit's due, too, man. Yeah, go ahead, Drinker.
Well, no, I know where this is headed because I know what's next. And it's what I said. I did not want the All-Star break for the Reds because they were playing so well. And the Pirates were playing well.
Yeah.
The Pirates now won 9 in a row, I believe. And they just beat the crap out of Cincinnati. And you know I hate to lose to anybody from the city of Pittsburgh. And to get swept the way they got swept is just you know, no hitting, no pitching, just an all-around no-show. Those guys were still on All-Star break, it looked like. I mean, it was bad. You can't come out and play like that at home, especially when you have been kind of, when you have been rolling a little bit. Very disappointing today. And this whole weekend with that performance against Pittsburgh, they swept us, and nothing else you can say, but they got to find a way to bounce back tomorrow.
What's your nickname for Pittsburgh, JQ?
Shitsburgh. You already know.
We just need you to hear it. Our listeners need to hear you say that, too, of course.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't give it to you the first time around.
Unless you're from Pittsburgh, that's another conversation. But, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, and how about Corey Dickerson? I tell you, he's red hot for the Pirates. He's homeward in four straight games. Yeah, and they surpassed the Cardinals, moving to third place in that division.
Yep.
Cardinals had the Cubs, so they had a tougher series, clearly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just disappointing when you for the Reds when you battle back to 10 games below 500 and after being at like 22 and to come out. They just didn't look like they were back from the All-Star break is all I can come up with when I'm watching, you know, that and looking at the highlights. They just weren't into it. So games they couldn't give away, they just gave away. We'll see what happens next.
Yeah, we got to give JQ credit because you called it. You were like, I don't want the All-Star to happen. All-Star break, no. The Reds are playing well, and then that's exactly what happened. So it's all good. All right. Let's talk about this next move here. I mentioned it earlier about Manny Machado. He's going to the Dodgers. And does it make the Dodgers the team to beat in the National League? And this is a great question, too, because, you know, the Dodgers, they said, hey, we're going all in. So I think it's a great move. But is it enough, JQ, to kind of make them or push them over – make them team to beat?
I don't. I think that gives them a really, you know, they can be in that conversation. I don't think it gives them a leg up, but it gives them that conversation where they can look around and say, okay, you got the young pups and the Phils and the Braves in the East. We don't know if the Nationals can continue to make a move up between them. When you got to jump two people, that's hard. You look at that loaded NL Central. St. Louis is playing better. You got the Cubs. You got the Brewers who are playing really lights out baseball. And then you look in their own division, and I still like the Diamondbacks with Greinke and Godfrey in that rotation. And then you got Boxberger and Bradley in the back end of it. So I can't say that it gives them a leg up because I look at them and say, okay, Clayton's been great, but Clayton's prone to get hurt, and he's prone to have postseason struggles. So like, he got a little bit of that corrected last year, but, you know, is that going to rear its ugly head again? And then you look behind them. I mean, you like Jansen in the bullpen. He's kind of recovered some over his beginning struggles in the year. But, you know, Stripling, you saw him get blown up in the All-Star game. Walker Buehrle, you know, coming back from rib injury. You know, Rich Hill is 85 years old. So you look past Kershaw and that rotation, even if you go to a two- or three-man rotation, can you trust any of those guys? And I would say no right now. And that's why I can't give them a leg up, because you're only going to get Clayton one every 4 days, and you can't blow Kenley Jansen out in the back end. You got to have the middle relief and those other starters step up. So I'm going to say no. I think the batting order is ridiculous. But a leg up in the NL, no, I think the NL is still wide open.
Gotcha. Let's keep Rob definitely engaged. Rob, your thoughts, bro?
Well, I mean, they're definitely in the running. There's no doubt about it, because there's no team in the National League that's head and shoulders above the rest. And right. So obviously, you know, the teams that JQ mentioned, the Phillies, the Braves, the Cubs, the Brewers, all of those teams in the mix, but the Dodgers have got as good a chance as anybody. And if they tighten up some areas in that bullpen there, they acquire a player like Zach Britton from the Orioles or something like that, they get another reliever or two, I think it could set them apart from the rest of the National League. Obviously, with that lineup, I mean, Manny Machado, I mean, obviously you're getting the guy that's hitting .319, 24 home runs, 66 RBIs, got a .392 on-base percentage. You know, he scored 48 runs in 96 games for the Orioles, and now he's going to be batting second in the lineup for the Dodgers. So that's going to really increase the number of runs he's going to score as well. And, I mean, yeah, if they can tighten up their bullpen, I think they could slightly distance themselves a little bit from the rest of the National League. But as it is right now, I think they have just as good a chance as anybody, but I don't think they're separating themselves. But if they can tighten up that bullpen – and depending on what some of the other teams in contention do, they could possibly distance themselves a little bit from some of the other teams in the National League, and they are the defending National League champs too.
I agree, but I think they still need another. I think they need another starter, unless those young guys I mentioned in Walker Buehrle and Ross Stripling continue to do what they're doing, where you can sit back and say, okay, I trust those guys. Because you look at Clayton, and you're like, yeah. But then after that, you're 2, 3, 4. Those guys I just mentioned, when the stakes are high and you're playing the Cubs in game 4 or game 5 or something like that, do you look back and say, you know what, that guy's going to be that guy right now. I trust him in that situation. Those guys right now have not shown us enough on film, you know, in real life to project that they're going to be able to do that. That's why I say I agree with you. I believe they're definitely in the running. But unless those guys step up, I feel like they got to at least sniff the market to see if they can find them, you know, another starter to pair with Kershaw going into the playoffs.
There it is. All right, we're moving right along here. Rob, let's talk about the Cubs. They're trying to add pitching. What's up with that story, sir?
Well, I mean, they're another team. Like I said, we just mentioned in the contention in the National League, and they have to find areas to improve. And there, I just mentioned Zach Britton from the Orioles. The Cubs are in the mix for him as well. And they're also a team that's trying to improve their bullpen as well. So these are all teams that are trying to figure out a way to distance themselves from the pack, which, like I said, you know, when you look at the American League, I mean, the Red Sox, the Yankees, and the Astros actually, to me, look like the top three teams in baseball, period. And they're all in the same league.
Yep.
And
yep.
And you're looking for a team that can kind of join them from the National League. And the Cubs and the Dodgers are both trying to do the same thing. They're two teams that's going to be looking for extra help, especially with the bullpen.
And
with the Braves as well, trying to improve the bullpen as well.
100%.
And the same thing I said for the Dodgers, I feel the same way for the Cubs. I think they need much more help in the bullpen than the Dodgers do. But I also feel like that we saw with Yu Darvish, my friend calls him Yu Garbage, because he was a Dodgers, he's a Dodgers fan, and you saw that foolishness that he went through last year. So can you really count on him? John Lester's getting up there, but he's still a Bulldog. But you look at that rotation and you say, can Quintana, you know, rebound when we don't know? It's not really looking well for that. So I feel the same way about the Cubs. And it's one team that, I mentioned them before, that I don't think is getting enough play in that. And it's the Arizona Diamondbacks. They've got a top-line starter in Greinke. Godfrey is a good, second one there. They've got the back-end pieces with Archie Bradley and Boxberger. And you look at that lineup with Lamb and Pollock and Goldschmidt, like they've got a really good team that nobody's talking about out there in Arizona. So I wouldn't sleep on them yet. They're going to make things interesting for the Dodgers in that West and definitely for those wild-card teams as well.
Yeah, definitely go out swinging as well. So I was waiting for Rob to finish the thought too. All right, gentlemen.
Manny Machado, I'll tell you, he's going to get the biggest free agency contract in baseball history this offseason. Look for that.
He's going to get it?
Yeah.
After Bryce Harper?
I agree. I think
he's going to get a bigger contract than Harper.
Because he's having a better year.
Right.
They're both probably
going to
get over 10 years, $300 million, that's for sure.
Yeah,
don't
I agree.
Them,
I think Machado
Argentina
is playing his – I think Machado is playing his way into that mid-300s, where I think Harper has played his way down from 400 to a lower 300. That's why I agree with Rob. I do. I think he's passing him on that money train right now.
Nice. All right, here. Let's talk about – we got 26 minutes here. We're moving right along. Again, 424-243-9519 is that number. Let's talk out to – we'll shout out to couple of basketball moves here, and the Boston, I love this, Rob, was re-signing Marcus Smart, a smart move for Boston. Yeah,
no
whatever.
Pun intended.
I love it. Rob, was that a smart move?
Well, one of the things you got to look around the NBA here in the last couple of years, we've seen a lot of these mid-level players get these $50 and $60 million contracts, and it's hard for me to find many of them that were worthy of those huge contracts, and when it comes to these mid-level players. So obviously, do I think, keeping Marcus Smart, was that a good move? I would say yes, because, I think he's a valuable player and adds depth to their roster. I just don't like the amount of money that they gave him. And like I said, I just haven't found a mid-level player that's getting these $13 and $15 million a year contracts that were worthy of those type of contracts. And and that's across the board. Even my Pelicans, we've signed guys in that mid-level price range, Solomon Hill and what's the guy, Etwan Moore. Those guys are serviceable players that we overpaid for in that same price range. And it's happening around the league, and that's really my only question mark about the move. I think if they could have got him at a better price, I think it would have been a little bit smarter for the Celtics, no pun intended. But you know, but like I said, he is a valuable player. He's a guy that brings it on, you know, the defensive end and able to run the offense for him in a pinch. I just don't like the value of the contract that he's getting. Like I said, I think there are a lot of teams in the NBA that has made a mistake with these mid-level type players and giving them these $13 to $15 million year contracts.
I agree. Luol Deng, Miles Gough, you know, 17, 18 for four years. And it's like, what are you doing? Why would you do that? I like them. I agree with you 100%, Rob. I like for what he brings to that team, that grit. And, of course, he's a flopper, and we got to acknowledge that. But he gets down and he sticks his nose in on defense, and he makes the other point guard or shooting guard who he's guarding, he makes that dude work every time down on the offensive end of the ball. He makes that guy work. And there's something to be said for that, because then that maybe he takes a little bit out of that guy when that guy has to go play defense. So, you know, I do like that for the team, what he brings to that team. But I agree. I'm looking at it like, who are you bidding against? Who else was going to give him that money? We're at this point of free agency. And, yeah, he got a little mad at them for, you know, whatever. But at the end of the day, it's a business on both sides. But who was going to give him that money? Like, if the Kings had stepped into that void, you let the Kings go ahead and give him 4 years of $52 million. You say, man, if that's what you want to do, then you knock yourself out in California with that high tax plan for a terrible team. You knock yourself out. You know, God bless. Or do you call his bluff and say, okay, we'll give it to you at 9 or 10 for the same amount of time? You know, we tell him, you know, we got these other guys we got to take care of. We want you, but, you know, not at 12, maybe at 9 or 10, and see what he says. You know, that I agree. And you look up and say, well, is that really that big of a deal? He's like, yeah. When you start talking about $3 or $4 million a year or 4 years, that's $16 million. That, you know, that can get you another decent player if you're playing your cards right, or help you accumulate space to getting a better player by not having committed that money to that additional money to Marcus Smart. So I'm with you, Rob. I think that's too much. I think they bid against themselves. That's one of the few times here recently I've had an umbrage with anything that Danny Ainge has done. And I hate to say that with him being a former Celtic. He's really been doing a good job, but I think this might be one of his few missteps.
Yeah. Well, definitely overall, he's done a phenomenal job bringing the Celtics back in contention. There's definitely no doubt. And how quick he was able to do it destroying the Brooklyn Nets by sending them the guys that were about 50 years old and Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett. And and Brooklyn bid on it, and he was able to rebuild that team pretty quickly. So overall, yeah, you can't question the work that he's done.
Good call. All right, I'm going to skip up a little bit too, because I definitely want to talk this out. So this is again, shout out to Tony, my boy. He's in Florida, and he actually had a really good comment on the Talking Sports Hoffman Facebook page. And he said he's tuning in and just wanted to hear our thoughts on the current claims about LeBron being the greatest Laker of all time, even before he's ever played as a Laker. And Shaq said it on national television. Yeah, Shaq said. So interesting about that. That's just, hey, this is just, that's what he said, you know, so he wanted to hear what the thoughts that we had about that. And we'll turn it to you, JQ, since obviously you are a Lakers fan too. So that's what Shaq said tonight. There you go.
He must have been on that goose or that henny or something when he was talking, because that's crazy talk. There's no way. First of all, that's really, you know, self-deprecating himself to say that. I wouldn't put him above Shaq as the greatest Laker of all time. But in no way, shape, or form is he up there for me as a Laker fan with Magic Johnson as the greatest Laker of all time. I mean, it's going to take some rings with an S to make me feel like that, and then put that with his other accumulation of rings. But the greatest Laker of all time before he's even played a game for the Lakers, with the lineage and the history that the Lakers have? I mean, you could say, you know, Jerry West. You could say Elgin Baylor. You could say Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. I mean, you could say Kobe. You could say Shaq. I mean, when you have a franchise, I mean, maybe not Elgin Baylor. I take that back. In terms of LeBron. LeBron might have him already eclipsed. But we're already talking about 4, 5, 6 people that you can name. He ain't played a game yet as a Laker. Like, I know he's a new, brand-new, shiny toy. I get it. I'm glad he's with the Lakers. But to say that is just, it's full-blown blasphemy, hyperbole, if you will.
Rob, you have nothing to say about that?
Yeah. Well, you know, I totally agree. I'm not a Lakers fan, but to say he's the best Laker of all time and he hadn't played a game for the Laker, I think LeBron James is the second-best player in NBA history. But to say he's the best Laker of all time, He hadn't played a game for the Lakers, so I don't think you can say that. But I think based on what he's done with the Cavaliers and the Heat, he's the second-best NBA player of all time, but not the best Laker of all time. And even though I think he's better than any Laker that's ever played the game, but
right.
I don't think you can. But he has not played for the Lakers yet, so I don't think you can say that. I mean, Magic Johnson, in my opinion, is the best Laker of all time. When the contributions he's made for that organization, both on and off the court, is phenomenal. And, you know, helping that team to win 5 championships during this era, playing in the game, and he actually played for the Lakers. So I actually think the Magic Johnson is the best Laker of all time. And I don't think LeBron would do anything to surpass Magic as the best Laker. Now, for him to, you know, to be loved, I think him to even be mentioned in the same conversation with the rest of the Lakers as the best Lakers of all time, I think he's probably going to have to deliver at least a couple of championships to him. And I know it's not going to be
three.
Easy with the Warriors
That's
being
the
in their prime right now. I'm sorry?
Three. I say three. If he finds a way to get three and get to six to match Michael and get three with the Lakers and help bring them back from the doldrums of what we've been in, it's going to be good barbershop talk if he gets to three. But no less than three is it even for real discussion for me as a Laker fan and as a basketball fan.
Yeah, and I think this is a big risk for LeBron James going to the Lakers too, because as great as he has been, and if he does not deliver a championship for the Lakers, I think that's a huge risk. Especially when you talk about the group of fans, the Kobe sexuals, the Kobe sexuals, I would say, people who love Kobe Bryant or over LeBron James. I think it's a big risk for his legacy too if he does not deliver a championship with his Lakers team too, because just about every great Laker has delivered championships for the organization. So it's a bit of a risk I think he's taking for his legacy as well. And it's not going to be easy with the Warriors being still in their prime, and they have about 5 or 6, however many of you, whoever you want to categorize as all-stars on that team. It's going to be really hard. And as of right now, he is the only all-star in that Lakers ball club.
Hey, what the big risk is, you keep calling people Kobe sexuals. You stop that kind of talk. I don't like it.
You know the Kobe sexuals out there.
stop it.
The Kobe sexuals, the Kobe groupies. You get off my Laker fans.
Everybody got it. There's Jordan groupies. There's Magic groupies. There's all kind of groupies. You get off. There's LeBron groupies. It's why it's kept. So
come on, Andre. I know you got my back on that. But you know there's the Kobe sexuals out there.
Hey,
that's Rogers out there.
There's all of them. Don't single out one group of sexuals. Talk about all of them.
Oh man, honestly, JQ must be guilty as being one of the Kobe sexuals. That's why I take it up.
Hey, listen, I tell you like this. I am a full-blown Kobe fan. I went to that outlet clearance center in New York when I was on the All-Star trip, and I started to call you, Rob, and I didn't. I'm sorry, but they didn't have your size. They had a black Kobe jersey in there, and I was all over that Lakers, Jacob. Like that Kobe jersey was in there. I said, oh, yeah.
You think you were still by Julio Jones? I would have burned that, too.
Oh, here we go.
No. There was an Anthony Davis one. There was a black Anthony Davis Pelicans one.
Burned that, right.
Yeah, I would have took that.
I know you would have.
But believe it or not, I do have a Magic Johnson jersey.
You got to have
that. We'll let him have that one. Okay. We'll let him have that one. Rob, or Tony, just let you know, Rob, he's a fan of everything opposite of what I am. You know, he's a Saints fan. He's a just LSU. Everything that is, it's been rough, man. So, all good. So, Tony just commented that he loved the Kobe sexuals comment, too. So, we also have a gentleman that loves Kobe
Tony,
no matter what, man.
Good man, Tony.
Yeah. No. Tony's a Falcon fan, by the way. So, just letting you know. So,
he agreed with me on the Kobe sexuals. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, that's funny. I got you.
Well, but
woo!
I'm sorry to hear that you're a Falcon fan, though, Tony.
Nah, don't apologize about that, bro. prayers are with you too, Rob. Hey, there's also Tony made a quick comment too. We're gonna talk about this. Just a real quick comment about he said. about the Manny Pacquiao fight. Was it legit or way to promote Pacquiao and bring back pay-per-view sales for the only household name left in boxing? That's kind of an interesting comment, too. Do you guys want to comment on that real quickly, or you guys hear anything about that, or no?
I saw Matisse. I think he fought Matisse, and they knocked him out. I would quibble with the fact that he's the last household name. I think Triple G is got up there, and I think that Canelo is on his way. Even if you don't like Canelo, I still think those two guys are, at this point, household names. But I would agree with him with the fact that it's getting real dark early, and there ain't a whole lot of them left. And Pacquiao is one, but Pacquiao is just taking a lot of punches, man, and has gotten older, and that's a deadly combination for a fighter. You know, he was at his prime, was one of the most exciting fighters, you know, out there. We just took too long to get the Mayweather-Pacquiao fight. But
100%.
I don't think he's the only one. So Tony, I appreciate you, yes, because I'm one of the few boxing fans left. But yeah, I agree with you. It's he ain't the only one, but there ain't a whole lot of them.
Yeah. Gotcha. Rob, you want to comment on that, bro, or you want to let that one slide?
We can move on.
Gotcha. All right, it's all good. So we talked about Ari, what's going to take for LeBron to be a all-time Laker great, and that's at least three championship from JQ, and I think that's where we are with that perspective too. Now, again, we're talking about this offseason, and there's been a couple of moves, and I guess the question is, how big is the gap between the Warriors and the Lakers, Rob? What are your thoughts about that?
Well, you know, one of our topics that's coming up here in a little bit is our top eight teams in the Western Conference, and I will say that was extremely hard for me to put together. I don't know about you all, of ranking those eight teams in the Western Conference. I was juggling them multiple times before I settled on an eight. But, I mean, there's still a pretty huge gap. We just talked about that. As we speak, LeBron James is the only all-star on the Lakers team. And how many does the Warriors have, Andre, since you're a Warriors sexual?
Oh, my gosh, man. You said just five, but I'm going to go with four. But it's all good, man. So, yeah.
I know we debated whether or not Iguodala is one or not, but
yeah,
you got to
have
at least five with DeMarcus Cousins on the team now, right?
Okay.
I mean, if you're talking Draymond Green, Cousins, Durant, Curry, Klay Thompson, and I know DeMarcus Cousins, it'd be a while before he's playing at his all-star level again, so I can understand that. But, I mean, there's still a huge gap when you talk about between the Warriors and the Lakers now. Brandon Ingram has a chance to eventually be an all-star, but he's not that yet, so we can't include him in that. I think it's still a pretty huge gap. And as we see it, and when you look at it, when you start putting together these playoff rankings in the Western Conference, I mean, I have the Lakers just barely getting in at the top eight. And, just to give everybody a sneak preview, I have them number seven in the Western Conference right now. So you're talking about Warriors who's definitely number one, and you have the Lakers, who's number seven, at least in my rankings. There's still a considerable gap. And like I said, a lot of these teams in the Western Conference have at least two legitimate all-stars, and the Lakers only have one. And, I mean, it's going to be really tough. I think it's still going to be tough sledding for the Lakers, and I know they have a 2 to 3 year plan. But, you know, you got to consider LeBron James' age. And if you're the Lakers, you got to find a way to get another superstar there pretty quickly. At least another one.
I watch a lot of PTI when you do the word association. And the word I would use would be sizable. There's a sizable difference between the Warriors and the Lakers right now. Like, for what you just talked about. Call it four
it's
and a half.
Men against boys right now.
Yeah, call it four and a half. If you feel like, you know, I'm going to give you a quarter for Iguodala and a quarter for Cousins the way he is right now. So I say four and a half with the ability to get to five and a half, depending on how those guys' health progress through the season. The Lakers, like, you're right. They got LeBron. They've got, you know, some nice little pieces. But I tell you what, the Michael Beasley signing, I mean, what's really happening? They are getting a team full of veteran thugs. That is going to be really interesting when they play Golden State and start playing these top echelon teams. Yeah, listen, man. You're talking about Rondo,
gangsta,
and McGee and Beasley. You're just talking about, like, just put some veteran goons that can do certain things well, but not do a lot of things overall in terms of across the board. But they have a specific skill set, you know what I'm saying, like what they can do. And they're going to be there to muck up the game. And that's their only chance. And I think that's what they understand. Like when Magic says, you're not going to out Golden State, Golden State. And he's right. You're going to be hard-pressed to find that collection of talent with that shooting and playmaking ability to match them without going and poaching other stars from other teams, which and those teams aren't giving up those stars. So them doing that, I don't think it's enough for them to beat the Warriors. Don't get me wrong. But it's those games are going to be ridiculous, yeah, because you know they're going to tell them, you know, bump them every screen, grab, pull, cut a fool, whatever you need to do to slow those guys down. There's going to be some fireworks in those games to watch. Yeah. It's going to be some power.
Yeah, I think Houston gave us a really good blueprint on how you can have a chance of beating the Warriors, and it's really on the defensive end. Houston didn't have the collection of talent that the Warriors had, but, you know, actually Mike D'Antonio really went against his own style of play in that series to give his team a chance of winning, and they slowed the Warriors down in that series for really well. And they did it mainly with, you know, defense. Ariza was phenomenal on the defensive end, even though he couldn't throw the basketball in the ocean. But from a defensive perspective, he was phenomenal in that series. And we look at P.J. Tucker and what he did on the defensive end, Clint Capella, what he did on the defensive end, and even Chris Paul before he got hurt in that series, what he did on the defensive end as well. James Harden has never met a guy he can guard, but the rest of those guys – they did a phenomenal job on the defensive end and really slowed the Warriors down in that series. So, I mean, I think you have to bring a level of physicality to the game if you're going to have any opportunity of beating them. And so maybe this blueprint is really what the Lakers are trying to do, but I think, you know, they definitely need at least another star on this team if that's the blueprint that they're going to try to follow.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
They could have had DeMarcus Cousins, and like I said, we won't talk about this now too, but that would have been a huge move if they get Kawhi, because that kind of evens the playing field and makes a little closer gap for the Warriors too. But that's neither here nor there. And like you said, JQ, it's definitely a tough couple year project, man, for sure, man. All right, we got about 7 minutes here. Let's keep this moving here. Let's talk quickly about the trade between the Hawks and the Thunder. Rob, you know, again, I know I was kind of going back and forth. I know I was kind of like expressing that. You knew that, again, once the Hawks drafted Trae Young, that the writing was kind of on the wall for Dennis Schroeder. And then whenever they got Jeremy Lin, that was definitely the nail in the coffin too. So obviously the move was the moral was to get rid of Schroeder and to kind of absorb Carmelo Anthony and then, again, trade him and waive him because he's not going to play with the Hawks. And it kind of worked out because you're getting rid of Schroeder, we get Justin Anderson from Philadelphia, and we lose Mike Muscala. Rob, your thoughts on that whole move or the whole trade for all the teams?
Well, I'm looking at this. Obviously, we know what's going to happen with Carmelo. He's going to get bought out by the Hawks, and, you know, nine times out of 10, 90% chance he's going to wind up with the Houston Rockets here. You know, looking at it from the point of view for the Thunder, is does this make the Thunder team better? And I actually think there's a real good chance the Thunder can be really they can be better from this trade and at least be a top four team in the Western Conference. With Dennis Schroeder, now we can see Westbrook play off the ball a lot more often. And I think one, as great as Westbrook is, I think one of his weaknesses is he does a poor job of making his teammates better. And I think with him being an off-the-ball player and kind of like taking the ball out of his hands a little bit more, obviously he's still going to have his balls in his hands a lot more. But I think if Schroeder can be that guy that can be the guy that facilitates and let Westbrook play off the ball a lot, and I think Westbrook will have a lot more energy, a lot more, you know, can probably push a few more extra minutes a game and things of that nature, and even probably become an even better defender as well with him not having to control the basketball as much going forward. So I think the Thunder has a chance to be better with this trade, and I know we're going to get to our top eight, but I have them they're a team that did not make it to the Final Four in the Western Conference last year, the Thunder. But I have them in number four spot, so I think they could be slightly better than what they were on last season. And I don't think they ever found the right role for Carmelo. And I think part of that is Carmelo's fault as well. So I think moving on for them will help the Thunder to be better. And like I said, I mean, you got Schroeder, who can be the point, and he's got Westbrook and Paul George on the wings there. I think they have definitely an opportunity to be a better ball club, and I think they will.
I think he was a backup point guard too, Rob. But, yeah, we'll see how it plays out. Go ahead, JQ.
Well, yeah, no, I think Rob touched on it. I agree. When I looked at it, what I was looking at it from was that, you know, they talked a good talk about, you know, we got a good relationship with Carmelo. We're trying to make sure this all works out. And I believe Oklahoma City also tried to ship out a protected 2020 first-round pick or 2022, something like that, as well. And Schroeder has, I believe, 3 years left on his deal, like $30-something million. Dollars.
Yeah.
So I was wondering why you would do that if you're saying, you know, we're doing this because they kept saying, you know, the tax hit because they got the biggest payroll with luxury than anybody in the NBA, and that says a lot considering they went out in the first round. But I feel like could you just stretch him and got rid of it, but and only done it for a year to bought him out, the same kind of buyout that Atlanta's going to do, but Atlanta has more cap space. But you're taking on so many more years. You know, Carmelo had one, and Schroeder has three. So was it really about, you know, tax savings? Because that's still going to put you in that tax land with him making, what, $13, $15 million a year. So that, to me, was the interesting part of the trade for them. But I agree with Rob that I think it does make them better. When you can have multiple ball handlers, you can mix and match. He's got to get his defensive game back up. And I think that Paul George and Russell Westbrook will hold him more accountable. And sometimes it's just the guys around you. Same with, you know, Harden's, you know, quote-unquote better defense. We're having Chris Paul in the year. Like, hey, man, get your weight up. You got to play defense, bro. Like, if they give him to kind of get that, he's got the ability, the physical ability to do it. It's what he put his energy and his mind to it. I think those two guys hold him accountable for it. And I agree with Rob. As I was putting together that top eight, I'll say it. I had them, you know, I have three tiers, and I think they're the top of that third tier. I put them third.
Okay. Yeah, good call. Just real quickly, because I know we've got about 3 minutes here, and we'll set up the OT portion here. I'll definitely say to answer your question, you know, I don't think they really wanted to pay, you know, they definitely didn't want to pay Carmelo, you know, so no matter what, the 29, that was definitely a situation for even for 1 year. So they're like, hey, we'll take the Schroeder for the $15 million, whatever, just to get rid of Melo. And we are the Hawks, like, hey, we'll take that contract just to get rid of Schroeder. So this is the actual trade where everybody, it's a win-win for everybody. You know that the art of negotiation would have a win-win for everybody. This is, everybody comes out ahead. You get your backup point guard, you know, or point guard to help, you know, OKC. You get rid of Carmelo. Hawks get rid of Schroeder. We're happy. Okay, we take on Carmelo, we're good. Carmelo can go play where he wants to play. Everybody's happy. You can get, like, your 2025 draft pick, you know, that can convert into a 2 second rounds, which, you know, a couple years from now, we're not sure what's going to happen with OKC. But, you know, again, it's a win-win for everybody. All right, before we get to the top teams, Rob, it is about 2 minutes. Let's go into the OT portion. Shout out to D-Tony. Thanks for listening out as well, bro. Go ahead, Rob.
Ladies and gentlemen, we certainly appreciate everyone tuning in again on tonight. Another great show, and we are certainly grateful for the opportunity to be delivering a great sports show to you all on tonight. Thanks for tuning in. We're going to be back on the air live on Wednesday night, August 1st. So we got a little bit of a break here, about 9 to 10 days or so. So we're going to be back on the air on Wednesday night, August 1st. We're going to be coming to you at 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 10 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time for those of you all on the left coast. We're getting ready to go into our OT portion. Unfortunately, we can't give you that portion of the show live, so click on the same link tomorrow. We still got more NBA talk going into the OT portion, and we even got a little bit of football talk as we're getting ready to, you know, a couple of teams already popping pads and training camp as well. Training camp's going to be all in live swing here this upcoming week, so we're getting you ready for the NFL season as well. So you don't want to miss that in our OT portion as well. So once again, click on the same link on tomorrow. You'll get the rest of the show, and you won't be disappointed. Once again, give us your feedback. Thanks, Tony, for giving us some feedback on the show tonight anymore. Please write us, tweet us, let us know what you think about the show. We would love to hear
call
from
in
you all.
Too.
Good night, people.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep. My fault, folks.
Serious callers only.
I'll be out of town. Yes, sir. I'll be out of town on Sunday, so we can't do it. We appreciate y'all for calling and tuning in. Appreciate you, Tony, for chiming in with your thoughts. And dang it, Cincinnati's losing to Pittsburgh. I mean, that's the only bad thing that's happened this weekend. Good night, people.
Oh, we love it. Cincinnati, definitely stand up, too. Again, appreciate everyone.
You better hope your job don't relocate you to Pittsburgh.
Man, listen, I had to switch jobs.
Just straight up, that's what it's all about. Hey, go ahead. Let's go ahead and talk about this now. I think we gave a quick update, Rob, if I'm not mistaken, where Carmelo's going to go. And if you did, if you didn't, I think we kind of said like 90% he's going to Houston. Is that pretty much the sting with that you're saying? And
I think it's pretty much
Rob,
a done deal.
Yeah.
He's going to go to the Rockets. I know it's pretty much, yeah, everyone's saying it's between the Rockets and the Heat, but I think he's going to wind up with the Rockets. I mean, they were the closest to being to the NBA Finals. And obviously, Carmelo still thinks he's better than what he is, and so he's hoping that he can go there and take that team over the hump. We talked about this on the show. I don't know if it was last week or the show before that. I think if he's used properly, he can help a ball club. But I think he has to be a guy that's coming off the bench. He cannot be a starter. And when you talk about the Rockets, if he's in that starting lineup, he's going to bring their defense, the play that they, all the improvement that they made on defensive last year is going to go to the tanks. And I just think he needs to be on the second unit with Eric Gordon, two guys that can come in and really score the basketball for that ball club on the second unit. And I still think they need a guy. They're obviously losing Ariza, even though he was 0 for 50 from the three-point line in that game seven. in that game. I mean, he was building schools, state-of-the-art schools, with the bricks he was throwing up there in that game seven. But for what he did for them on the defensive end, was tremendous. I think that's going to be a huge loss. They have to find at least another type of player, I think, to put in the starting lineup that's going to bring that kind of defensive effort. And I think if you can bring Carmelo off the bench and with a Gordon and really give them buckets and things of that nature, if he's used properly, if he's willing to accept that role, I think he could be a help to the Rockets. But if he's not in that role, you know, they can be in danger of a team or two passing them in a Western Conference.
And that's why I struggle with where I was going to place them. But I also can't leave out for Houston. That's how I push a bit about Carmelo, because we've talked about it multiple times. I totally agree. If he would allow himself to be a microwave, Vinny, shout out to Vinny Microwave, and come off the bench, and him and Eric Gordon just come out and just blow people out the, you know, when they put their bench in and just go completely ham, you know, in later stages of the first quarter, early second quarter, the same thing in the late part of the third quarter, early fourth quarter, then you kind of gauge the game flow, and if you need him or not, or if he's playing, deciding to play a similar to defense that day, can you put him out there with the starters? But they need to use him like that. I totally agree with Rob on that point. Houston's got to re-sign Capella, and that can't be understated. They cannot lose Capella and Ariza in the same offseason. I know he's restricted, they're going to sign him, but they need to find somewhere where they meet do a little bit more than that $5.4 million, whatever it is, and a little less than what Boston signed Marcus Smart for. I think that is where they need to find a sweet spot with their negotiations with Capella. I don't know if he's going to do it, but that's what they would need to do if I was the Rockets. But he's going to Houston. I think if you look at it, I'm not going to L.A. because they're not there yet. So you talk about Miami and Houston. One of my homeboys, Dwayne Wade, is in Miami, but he's playing on a half a leg, and that team is all kind of crazy. And the East might be more wide open, but they aren't one of the top echelon teams in the East. Then I'm looking at the Rockets, and I know I got to deal with Golden State, but I watched them take them to seven games, and I feel like, you know, if you're Carmelo, I can come in and help them, like you said, push him over the edge, and maybe unfounded if he's talking about starting. But if he comes off the bench, he can help them, you know, in that quarter where they need the buckets, get buckets. So that's what I see for them and him. If he does that, Houston can at least stay closer to even to where they were, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. They won 65 games last year. I mean, they played that game seven in Houston. You know what I mean? So if he can come in there and keep him around that win total between 60 to 65 again, and accept that role, he can be something for the Rockets. But it's a very unique circumstance. He's going to have to agree to settle into.
Couple things really quick. I'm going to say two things really quick about Carmelo. He messed up twice first whenever, you know, Lala, Power, that's messed up. You messed that one up. And then second, basically what he says is that his defense, Rob, is the outscores man on offense. So that's kind of how he plays defense. Just shout out for you, bro. Just want to let you know that's how that plays out. So all good. Hey, let's keep this moving here, Rob. Let's talk about the top or the best 8 teams in the Western Conference. And then you're up next, JQ.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and as I mentioned before, other than number one, this was really tough putting together these teams because when you really look at the Western Conference, they are legitimately 11 teams that got a chance of making a playoffs in the Western Conference. I mean, it's going to be really scary. And I know traditionalists don't want to break up and put the top 16 teams in the playoffs, just 8-8 from the East, 8-8 from the East, 8 from the West. But it's you know, it's going to be a really dogfight, and obviously, you know, what teams can stay healthy is going to be a big part of, you know, who's going to wind up in the playoffs as well. That's going to be a big key to it as well. Obviously, you know, let's start with the Warriors. If they're healthy, they're in. They're the NBA. They're the NBA champions again if they're healthy. I mean, that's just the bottom line. I hate it. I hate them. But, you know, it is what it is. If they're healthy, they will be the NBA champions and the Western Conference champion again, obviously, if they're healthy. Considering the Rockets bringing Clint Capella back, as long as he's back, I still have them in the number two position for now. My thinking is that Carmelo is going to finally accept the role, and he will be able to help them come off the bench and really have, you know, a really productive scoring second unit. And so I still have them in the number two position in the Western Conference. And you guys might be surprised by the team I have at the number three spot. But I have the Spurs. I have the Spurs moving back up to number three. And just think about it. They were a number seven team last year without Kawhi Leonard being gone for the whole season. DeMar DeRozan is not Kawhi Leonard. But mark my word, Greg Popovich is going to, you know, have a system in place to where this team is still going to be productive. And they have a lot of nice young pieces on this team, too, when you really look at their roster here, too. And so I look at DeMar DeRozan. You know, when you look at LaMarcus Aldridge and whatever Pau Gasol has left in the tank, I think they move up in the Western Conference. Like I said, this is to me, they're getting a player that they did not have on their team on last year. Like I said, Kawhi Leonard, you basically could say, was not on that team last year, and they were number seven in the Western Conference, and they're getting an all-star to join that team. And so I moved him up based on the fact of Popovich and based on the fact of getting DeMar DeRozan on that team. I just you just got to bank on Popovich, you know, making that team better. As I talked about a little while ago about the Thunder, you know, I have them in the number four spot. Like we talked about, you know, having Russell Westbrook play off the ball more, I think will allow him to do a lot more with his athletic ability on that team. And you know, I just think that they will be better off for that, having a guy that can possibly be a true point guard and let him play off the ball a little bit more. So we'll see if I'm right on that front. But I have them up to the number four spot in the Western Conference. Number five, you guys probably going to think I'm a homer, but Anthony Davis is clearly right now one of the top three players in the game.
Homer.
And,
come on, man.
So he's right there behind LeBron and Kevin Durant. I mean, Kawhi Leonard could possibly be that as well if he's healthy. But the way Anthony Davis played last year in the starring role, and now you have Jrue Holiday playing at an all-star level as well. And I really like the addition of Julius Randle as well. This is, once again, you got to think about this Pelican team. They were a top four team in the Western Conference and really was a top three team by the time we got to the playoffs last year. And they did not have Boogie Cousins. So right now you're getting an additional player to go with them and Julius Randle. And actually, he's coming from the same system. Luke Walton runs the same system. Elvin Gentry runs the same system, where he can be like a point power forward as well. So I really like the addition, believe it or not, of Julius Randle. I know losing Rondo is losing the guy with the basketball IQ, Rondo, I think hurts. But Elfrid Payton is a similar player to Rondo. He just don't have the basketball IQ that Rondo has yet.
They both have a similar skill set
when you look at their stats, when you look at the points that they score per game, the assists per game. Obviously, he doesn't have the name that Rondo has, but he just doesn't have the basketball IQ that Rondo has. But I think the addition of Randall makes their team better. You know, like I said, they did not have Cousins, and they were already a top three team at the end of the season last year in the Western Conference. But although I did drop them down to five, even though they were in the top three in the West last year. The Timberwolves, another team, they are loaded with talent. We have to see how things come together for them. Andrew Wiggins, to me, is still a guy that's really underachieved when you look at his athletic ability and what he's capable of. I think if he can ever reach where he should be, this team could be really scary. But you still have Jimmy Butler, and you still have Karl Anthony Towns on this team. So that's really scary as well. I think they move up from the eighth spot. And obviously, the reason why they fell at eight last year is because Jimmy Butler got hurt in about 4 to 6 weeks there toward the end of the regular season. So I moved him back up to six. And, you know, LeBron James, we hadn't even got to the Lakers yet, but I had them at number seven, clearly on the strength of LeBron James. And so I put them in the mix, but they don't have another all-star on their team, even though Brandon Ingram has the potential to be one. We talked about Rondo's basketball IQ. Acquiring a player like that could help them as well, and he has been a former all-star before. And they have some young pieces of Kuzma, and then we'll see with your boy. What's the dude with the jackass parent? Alonzo Ball. So we'll see with these, you know,
jackass
these,
parent.
Wow.
I have them at number seven, and it's hard to imagine the team with LeBron James on and finishing seven in a conference. But I it's hard for me to put them above any of the six teams that I have above them at the moment. And number eight, I have the Utah Jazz. Donovan Mitchell, Rudy Gobert, I expect Mitchell to probably be an all-star player this coming year. Gobert, doesn't put up the sexy stats, but I think he's an all-star caliber player of everything he does on the defensive end. And when you look at the blocks, the rebounds, the way he changes shots, he makes a big difference when he's in the game for the Utah Jazz. He's a huge, we talk about Clint Capella, but he's the same type of player that can add that element of the game for them. We're talking about a team that was in the Final Four in the West last year in the Utah Jazz. So, I mean, I have them at number eight. I mean, that's just how loaded the Western Conference is. The Portland Trail Blazers, I have them at number nine. And they're a team that finished the third overall best record in the regular season, and I don't even have them going to the playoffs. I mean, they got swept in the first round. They looked horrible in the first round of the playoffs, and I don't think they got any better. They're probably one of the few teams in this Western Conference that did not get better at all. And so I have them taking a huge drop this coming season. And then you got a team like the Denver Nuggets and the Clippers, who I think are also possibly be in the mix as well in the Western Conference as well. So that was really hard for me putting together that top 18. And, I juggled that multiple times to try to come up with that final eight. And so it definitely, I'll admit, it was not easy for me at all.
Ooh. Yeah, that's a lot to digest. You're dropping Portland out. Okay. Portland's tripping a little bit. I haven't fallen. I look at it like this when I was looking to try to rank them. I think there's three distinct tiers in the Western Conference. I think it's number one. We talked about it. You don't need to talk about it a whole lot. It's Golden State with a bullet. They're in that top tier. They're the one seed. Barring ridiculous injury, they're the number one seed. I agree with him. I think Houston stays. I think they drop from one to two, but I still put them a slightly bit of a head. Just with the Chris Paul, James Harden, when you got those two guys, and if Carmelo can accept that role. Then you add another, you know, very viable weapon with Eric Gordon coming off the bench for Houston. I still think they stay in there. I think the Capella comes back. I don't think he holds. I think he signs and becomes an unrestricted free agent. If they don't get a long-term deal done, he signs that qualifying offer. And then that's where it gets real murky. Those two are really easy to do. Because, I mean, I'm looking here at the way the Western Conference ended. Portland was 49-33, and they were the 3 seed. The A seed was Minnesota, who beat Denver on the last night of the season to make the playoffs. Their record was 47-35. You've got the 3 versus 8 seed being separated by 2 games. Think about how ridiculous that is. 2 games, that's the end of the year, and Denver not making it at 46-36. That's where it gets really hard, to Rob's point. So I'm going to try. At 3, I'm going to go with Oklahoma City. And I feel like some of that is going to be chemistry. I feel like they got rid of Carmelo and they needed to for their chemistry. Paul George coming out before LeBron says where he's going to go and says, I'm staying here with Russell Westbrook. To me, at Russell Westbrook's party, that, which you talk about a lot with the 11 rings, that chemistry, that camaraderie, that piece of it, they aren't the most top to bottom the greatest, but those two and Steven Adams to do the dirty work, I think can really be – can be something there in Oklahoma City. I really do. And the Schroeder can come in and give them another playmaker. I'm going to take Oklahoma City 3rd. And then it starts to get a lot more harder for me. I like Donovan Mitchell. I like Donovan Mitchell. I like what you talked about with Rudy Gobert. They re-signed Derek Favors as well, so they run those back at the 4 and the 5, and they figure it out. You can't really bank on Rubio a ton because he gets hurt. But when he plays, I had him on my fantasy team. And I kept him because he balled out when he was healthy. He was a really good compliment, secondary ball handler to Donovan Mitchell. I like Utah. I like them standing in that area, that 4 or 5. I'm going to put them 4. Outside of that, I'm sorry. I just think New Orleans losing Rondo, I just can't keep them up there. If Jimmy Butler and Karl Anthony Towns can sit down and get together and say, hey, man, we can do some things with the talent we have on this team. If those two can get together, I would love – I'm going to go ahead and put Minnesota 5th at ESPN. They just have too much talent to do that. I agree. Andrew Wiggins has to definitely take a step forward. But I really am bullish on Carl Anthony Towns, and Jimmy Butler is a proven talent. So I'm going to put them there at the 5 spot. The 6th spot, I can give you San Antonio with DeRozan. I don't think Utah.
Utah, okay.
I put Utah 4. I put Oklahoma City 3rd. I put Utah 4th. I put Minnesota 5th. I'm going to take San Antonio 6th. I like DeRozan, but you say he's an all-star, and I don't know if you heard me chime in. He's an Eastern Conference all-star, and I think that makes a difference right now with the way the Western Conference is so loaded. So, I mean, yes, I take nothing from him, but there's a definite difference
than what they had on their team last year.
I get it, but I don't think he's as great as a defender as it's made out. You lose some of that 3-point shooting with Danny Green. I can see them stand in that spot. That Western Conference is loaded. I mean, we're talking about a game or two difference between 3 and 8.
Right.
So when you rank these guys right here, you aren't saying that this team is 5 games better than this other one. This is a 2-game swing, and I expected to say the same way between 3 and 8. So when I'm ranking them, I'm not saying, oh, this team is just so much better than this other team that I put a slightly ahead of them in another
spot.
How
do you put the Jazz ahead of the Spurs, and the Jazz hadn't gotten any better, and the Spurs did?
Because I feel like Donovan Mitchell is enough of a star. He's going to take another leap, and he's going to put that team on his back. I could be wrong. I like Donovan Mitchell. I think Donovan Mitchell takes another step forward, and you still got those twin towers down low. And a lot of teams don't have, and if you allow yourself to play your brand of basketball, where you can beat them up down low and rebound, and Gobert, then you can catch people, especially coming off a back-to-back of 3 games and 4 nights, and you just beat them to death down low with 2 big dudes. Yeah, you can catch them and get those sneaky wins in there. Again,
and those guys are more athletic than Aldridge and Paul Gasol. I'll give you that for sure.
Exactly. But I'm still really doing it on the strength of Donovan Mitchell. If I'm being honest, I am. I think the Lakers, again, at 7, I think that's a good spot for them. That 7th, 8th, 9th spot, I just don't think they have enough proven right now, we can say, you know, July, you know, 22nd, that those guys are going to step up LeBron and catapult them up. I don't think that. I mean, I would love for it to happen, obviously. But if I'm going to be objective, I'm going to put them there in that 7th spot. And then that 8-9 is where I will put New Orleans battling Denver right there. And I haven't even mentioned Portland, but I think that Portland, I agree, that sweep, I don't think there's a whole lot of I don't think Lillard's happy. I think he's trying to put on a brave face, but I don't think he's happy. And that guard rotation, I think they got figured out. I'm not as bullish on Nurkic. You know, he disappears a little bit. He's a soft kind of, you know, big man, wants to, you know, move out to the 3-point line. They're in that mix, in that 8-9-10 mix, but I think they take a tumble down. But again, a tumble down from third to being out is three games. You know what I mean? It's three games. So when we do these rankings of these Western Conference teams, you know, for everybody listening, understand that this is how we feel it's going to play out. But I think I agree with Rob. I think Rob would agree with me that these games, the difference between the three and the eight, I don't think it's going to get bigger. Maybe not be two games like it was last year. It may expand to maybe four games. But you talk about four games over an 82-game season. That's not a whole lot of separation in that Western Conference from your three to your eighth, ninth, tenth slot. I think we're going to see that play out again.
Yeah, and the thing we got to look at it is the Western Conference got even better this offseason.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we can look at the Warriors got better, and that's scary.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if we can clearly make a point that – I don't know if we can say the Rockets got better yet, but I think they did enough to at least stay where they are. But the Warriors got better, and we think the Thunder's getting better. The Spurs got a piece – that it didn't have on last year, so you got to think they're going to get better. The Pelicans got a piece that they didn't have last year in Julius Randle, so you got to think they're going to be better, and they got a top three talent on their team already. So when you look at a lot of these teams have made moves where you think, you know, they're going to be better, and and the Lakers are going to be better. You got LeBron James, who's still the best player in the game. So you look at a lot of these teams in this conference. At least five or six of these teams got better, and you know, with players that they didn't have on their roster last year, that can really help them as well. And so, I mean, that's what's going to make the Western Conference so intriguing here going into next season. So it's you know, to JQ's point, it's going to be really interesting. You know, for really from 2 to 11.
Agree. And, I mean, I put Houston there based off of their, again.
I think the Clippers got better, believe in that.
Mm-hmm. Agree. But you say you put Davis there because he's a top three talent. I put, you know, Houston with that second spot because they've got, you know, two top 15, top 20 talents in Chris Paul and James Harden. Mm-hmm. Where you feel like they can soften that blow where they'll win 65 games, but they win 59. You know what I mean? And that could still put them in that two spot where, you know, they just had a phenomenal year last year. I don't expect them maybe to get to 65, but you say 60, 59 wins. I kind of put them there because of the strength of those two guys. But I totally agree. Mm-hmm. You know, if Carmelo comes in and fucks up that chemistry and they can't repeat it with Ariza gone, they could fly. Sorry. They could fly, and that 2-11 is Golden State and everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
It's true. Carmelo seems to be a cancer. You just have to put that out there.
Yeah. And, you know, to me, that's what's going to be exciting about the NBA season next season. I think it's a foregone conclusion who's going to win it all. But I think watching the Western Conference next season will be, and really, to some degree, to see who comes out of the Eastern Conference now that LeBron James is gone too, I think will be intriguing as well. You know, Boston, is it Toronto, is it Philadelphia? I think that could be very intriguing as well. But I think that's where the intrigue is going to come from in the NBA next season.
I'm still going to say Washington and Milwaukee. I'm going to throw them in there.
Yeah, good call. All right, gentlemen.
I'm going to steal one of your lines, JQ. You stop it.
let's wrap up the show with the top teams or how the order is for the NFL East, if you will, too. We'll save the James Harrison comment next week, too, if you don't mind, too. But, let's talk about really quickly the NFC East predictions here. Obviously, if you're checking out there, fam, you know, we're clearly looking at East side. We're looking at the Cowboys, the Giants, the aforementioned Super Bowl champion Eagles, and the Washington Redskins. What see you, JQ?
Again, I'm going to go with the Eagles. I think they've got the quarterback. And I've been watching some of his workout stuff and what he's been doing. I think Carson Wentz is going to be back. I like that Philadelphia team. You know, Philadelphia fans, you know, we can talk about them ad nauseum. But I think that product that the Eagles are putting on the field in that division, I still think they're going to win that division. And I work this way. I think the Redskins are going to be fourth. I really do. I just don't think Alex Smith is going to be enough to keep them where they were in a very tough NFC, and they're going to take some hits, and the record is going to reflect that. I just am not bullish on the Redskins. He might prove me wrong, but I don't think so. And then we get to the Cowboys and the Giants, and we talked about that Giants defense. I feel like they underperformed a bit last year. I think a piece of that was also a very bad Eli Manning, but Eli has all these weapons now, and it's like, dude, if not now, then it's over. You might as well just hang them up. I mean, you got a pretty decent defense. You got Saquon Barkley added to the mix. You got Odell Beckham Jr. You got Shepard. You got Evan Ingram at tight end. It's tough because I also like, of course, I like Zeke and I like Dak, but I feel like the Giants have more weapons. And I think they have a better defense when they come to play if Eli can stop putting them in bad situations. So I'm going to go Eagles, Giants, Cowboys, Redskins.
I agree with DQ on the top two in that order on the top two. And obviously I have the Eagles still at the number one position when you look at all the things that they bring to the table now with the quarterback position, offensive line, the defensive front. Obviously, they lost a little bit of depth in the secondary, but I still think they have enough to remain number one in the NFC East. And when you look at their overall roster, and even if Carson Wentz is not ready here in the first couple of games, we saw what Nick Foles was able to do here to get them through the rest of the season along last year, and they won in the Super Bowl. So I think they're clearly the number one team in the NFC East. But I like the Giants to move all the way up to number two. And I think Saquon Barkley is going to be a big reason of that. And the Giants haven't had a running game in like 58 years. And then you add a guy like Saquon Barkley to the mix. And, hey, you look at the last couple of years when we had the top running backs. Look, Leonard Fournette last year, he led the Jaguars all the way to the AFC Championship game. And the Jaguars got a chance to get the Super Bowl this year, but that's another topic for another week.
That's up there. Jacksonville and Falcons for Super Bowl. Go ahead.
Well, I agree with the Jacksonville, but I don't agree with the other team you talked about. But, you know, that's another topic for another week.
So
but but anyway, let's move on, people. Some serious talk.
Oh, wow.
That is serious.
But
the
Giants here. And then the year before that, when you saw what Ezekiel Elliott did for the Cowboys, too, I think Barkley could have a huge impact on the Giants, similar to what you saw Fournette did last year and what you saw Zeke Elliott did with the Cowboys the year before. And the Giants, if they can get Odell Beckham back to form here and healthy, they could be really scary offensively. And their defense is not horrible. They have enough pieces on there to, you know, really make a contributing team here. I think the Giants could really move all the way up to like a 7-9, 9-7 type team this year and be second place in that NFC East with an outside chance at being a wild card just because of the element that Barkley is going to bring. I mean, he'll be, you know, he's a piece that they'll be able to use in the passing game as well in the running game with his diversity. So look for him to be you've been seeing running backs make this kind of impact here in the last couple of years, and I expect the same out of Saquon Barkley and the Giants. So I moved him all the way up from last place to the number two team in the NFC East. So, yeah, definitely JQ is now in the same agreement with the top two. And the latter part of the division, slight disagreement there. I actually have the Redskins ahead of the Cowboys. I'm wondering where they're going to get the playmakers from outside of Zeke Elliott. They don't have any wide receivers. Their tight end retired. And I know they still have that offensive line, but, you know, what teams will be stacking a box against them with 8-9 people in the box? They still don't have a really good offensive line. But I just wonder where the playmakers are going to come from on the perimeter for them on the offense.
Allen Hurns.
Michael Irvin's coming back as Hurns.
You stop it.
Alan Hurns was good before he blew his leg out. I mean, we got. I like Hurns.
Hey, you need legs, right?
You absolutely, especially a wide receiver.
Okay.
I would say legs and hands are pretty important as wide receivers.
Yeah. And to me, that's I think it's going to be close between the Redskins and the Cowboys, but I just see a little bit more on paper from the Redskins to put them in the three spot, over the Cowboys. That just concerns me about the Cowboys and, you know, where they're going to get there, where are the other weapons from on offense. And I just don't see it on paper. Unless somebody
you don't like
just
Cole
come
Beasley?
Out of nowhere. I hate to keep stealing your line, JQ.
I do.
You go ahead and say it this time, Andre.
Stop it.
Yeah.
Stop it. There you go.
Come on, man.
I got to play on my third place pick. I got to play him up.
So to me, that's just where the concern with the Cowboys come from. Defensively, you may see some improvements from them, but I'm just wondering where they're going to get the offense from. With the weapons, I don't know if they really are going to be helping Dak Prescott out at all with anything on the perimeter. And it's just going to be hard for them to beat teams with just the running game. And, I just think they're going to have to loosen it up a little bit, and they're going to have to find a playmaker or two on the perimeter to really help them. And I just don't think they have it. And to me, that's the only difference. That's the reason why I have them at number four and the Redskins at number three. I just think the Redskins, they at least have some young weapons on the perimeter that can get the job done. But, obviously, and we'll see what kind of impact, the Redskins is going to have in their running game. But I think they can at least spread it out a little bit with Alex Smith, with the weapons that they have, and the running back that he got from LSU. We'll see what he can do. And, see if they've gotten any, Darius Geis, see if they're getting any better.
Sure, boy.
We'll see. I just think they have a little bit more on paper than the Cowboys do. And that's why I have them three in the Cowboys. Hard to imagine that I have the Cowboys number four, but I just can't see where the weapons are.
Well, you say about Washington,
you know why.
But let's talk about it. The tight end, his name just escaped me. He can't stay healthy. Dotson lost his whole year because he couldn't stay healthy. Terrell Pryor missed it because of his ankle. I like guys, but I'm not sold on those weapons staying healthy for 16 games. Alex Smith is also a deacon ducker. He's not going to really take shots. And he doesn't have Tyreek Hill where he can just throw Tyreek Hill a bubble screen and Tyreek Hill goes 80 yards. I don't think Washington has that guy. I could be wrong, but I don't think that they do. So for the way that he plays, if those guys, if they're healthy, when you keep talking about guys that keep getting hurt, and it ain't a one-year thing, it's a two- or three-year thing, it's hard for me to put them above another team. When you have, I think the offensive line for Dallas bounces back a little bit. I agree. I poke fun. Allen Hurns is a two, and Cole Beasley is a three. They don't have a number one. But when he had a number one, he really didn't go to Dez like that. And I know Dez had lost a step, but he didn't really was locked onto him. He's going to mix it up. So they're going to have to find some magic in camp with somebody that comes under the radar at wide receiver and just comes out and shows out. That's why I can't put them up there with the Eagles and the Giants. But the NFC is tough. You can see one of those guys jumping the other one like, ooh, well, I sold that wrong. He did stay healthy. And Alex Smith did lead them to this, Or they found X guy in training camp and he came out and balled out with Hurns and Beasley and balanced out that running game. And the Cowboys are a little better than we thought they were going to be. That NFC is going to be really loaded. I feel like, you have top teams, but then you have other teams that have pieces, Like, they have pieces here and there. They just don't have it across the board. And it's like if somebody flashes in that vacuum to where they can fill that void of where you thought they didn't have that piece, but then they did, that team can, take a two or three win bump, and it's a whole different conversation. So, again, it just, to me, comes back to the fact that the NFC is just loaded.
Yeah.
100%.
I only see one team making a playoffs out of this division. And, there's an outside chance the Giants would sneak in at a wild card. I think there's a real outside chance of that. But as of now, I only see one team coming out of this division and making the playoffs, just like last year.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, we all know the real reason why. why Rob is not putting the Cowboys fourth because he hates the Cowgirls. Bottom line, that's pretty much.
What's their nickname?
I try to put those kind of things.
What's their nickname, Rob? What's their nickname, Rob?
Oh man, come on! We already know the Cowgirls.
There it is. If you're gonna make me do it, you got to do it. Okay, go ahead.
Hey, and I'm right in the middle of Cowgirls country too. And I'll see
you
live.
You better be careful. You better be careful. Yeah.
Y'all Cowgirls and y'all proud.
Yeah, I was gonna say yeah.
Finish your
thought, Rob. You down there in Austin. Yeah.
But as much as possible. You know, I'm trying to be objective and not putting them there in that spot because I'm not a fan of them. And I think the Redskins I think we both make some valid points. Well, I guess we have to wait and see, you know, how it all trickles out there. But yeah, that's just my concern with them is, you know, where is the offense going to come from outside of Zeke Elliott? But
yeah,
we'll see.
Valid.
Mm-hmm. That's why they play the games, as they say. But I definitely only see one team making a playoffs out of this division. That's just my prediction, just like last year.
I agree with you on that.
I'll say this, just wrap it up with the Cowboys, and it's funny because, again, while they had a great pick, who they got the linebacker, I really fully thought they were going to take Calvin Ridley. So that's the kind of crazy thing, too. I mean, even if he's not the number one, but – for development purposes. And I was like, man, he's not. And then, because we knew going in, that's what they needed, right? They needed a wide receiver. And so they didn't draft him. It was like, what? What just happened? And he's there.
Well, as we talked about in our preliminary draft shows, we knew it was going to
be
either a linebacker or a wide receiver. They were very high on Leighton Van Der Esch going into the draft, too. So, I mean, who they picked was not a surprise to me at all.
Oh, yeah. Not the pick, but what they needed. Yeah, mm-hmm. good.
Yeah, I mean, who they wound up picking was not a surprise, they were really high on Leighton Van Der Esch, and we talked about that on our pre-draft shows heading up to the draft. So that's not necessarily a surprise that they passed Calvin Ridley. If they would have took somebody other than Leighton Van Der Esch or Calvin Ridley, then I probably would, or another position besides linebacker, wide receiver, then I would probably have been surprised. But and even Ridley, you know, there's only a handful of wide receivers that's come into the league as rookies and been able to contribute, you know, with big numbers. So even if the Cowboys would have got him, would it be a little bit better? Yes. But would that, you know, propel them? You know, maybe I'll be a little bit more comfortable picking them number three if they had Ridley. But, you know, we'll see. JQ also mentioned that Prescott wasn't really using those guys on the perimeter a whole lot anyway. So, you know, we'll see.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not a big factor in their offense.
I didn't mean it like that, but I'm saying just for the fact that that was a clear need, too. From, like I said, I know you had the linebacker and the wide receiver, so either or, but it was just kind of surprising for us. Like, man, this is a guy that you thought would have been there for you guys. Yeah, but good.
You know what it is? The other piece of it is that it's Sean Lee insurance, right? Sean Lee is phenomenal for Dallas when he can stay 100%. In the game. But he's up to maybe like 2, 3, 4 concussions at this point and other kind of ailments. They were like, okay, if we can find somebody we feel like mimics what he can do and the difference that that Lee makes for our defense, if we can't count on him moving forward, but we feel like we have a replacement for him, then we can make up for not having Calvin Ridley. I was surprised. I'll be honest with you. I was surprised when they didn't take Calvin Ridley just because of the need. Now you've got your own version of the triplets. They're all young, on rookie contracts. Let's do this. But when they picked Jander Esch, that let me know that their concern for Sean Lee runs very, very deep. And you can't discount that. Sean Lee is a monster for them when he's in the middle of that defense and he's healthy, but he can't stay healthy. And if you feel like you can't find a younger replacement for him, then you do that because you say, okay, when he plays, if we get somebody that can play how he plays, we're a totally different defense. We're a totally different team. But can we? It just having Calvin Ridley and that Sean Lee question mark really propel us. So that lets me know how deeply they have a concern for Sean Lee's long term health.
Yeah,
great fit. 100%.
And Van Der Esch is a slightly different kind of player than Sean. He's a guy that can play middle linebacker, but he's a guy as third down you can move to the edge and use as a pass rusher too. So he's got some versatility there. A little bit more versatility than Sean Lee, if he pans out, of course, at the next level.
Mm-hmm.
But and that's what the Cowboys envision him, as a guy that can play in the middle on your base and a guy that can move to your edge on pass rushing situations.
Yep. You're right, and it may not necessarily always equate to the same position, but it's the impact, right? If I can get somebody that gives me not necessarily the same, every kind of play, the same kind of play, but the same kind of impact, maybe in a different kind of way, then I feel like my defense takes a step forward. And then we've been surviving when we didn't have, we had Dez, you know, a step and a half slower. When we had our healthy middle linebacker, our healthy just uber player on defense, we can play defense and run the ball and eke out some games and then maybe get some explosive plays here and there. So I agree with you. They play different positions. I just, when I saw it, I was a little shocked. But then my secondary thought was they have concerns about Sean Lee, and they need somebody that can be in that second level of the defense and wreak havoc. They can come down to the first level, like you say, and rush the passer, but also be able to float back in that second level and make plays.
Good call.
Yep.
All right, gentlemen, we'll be here all night, and I know I'm kind of nervous about the lady too, so let's go ahead and wrap up the show. Rob, set us up for next week, or excuse me, the following week, and then we'll wrap up another edition of Talking Sports with the 12th Men.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, once again, thank you all for tuning in. We're going to be back at you on Wednesday night, August 1st. Once again, we're coming at you on Wednesday night, August 1st. That'll be 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 10 p.m. Pacific, and 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time for our friends out on the West Coast. You don't want to miss it. Obviously, we're getting ready to go into by then. I think all teams should be in training camp, so we'll be getting more into football mode, and we're going to come at you. Our next preview will be the NFC South, and so that'll be the last of our NFC divisions. So we're going to preview the NFC South on our next show. Then we'll start getting to the AFC, and also stay tuned for some college football conference predictions as well. We're going to start rolling that out here pretty soon as well. All of that's right around the corner. So football season is rapidly approaching. I know July was pretty dominated by NBA free agency, and we're going to start to see that kind of wind down a little bit. And it was, so we got the football season and the baseball stretch run here coming up soon here. All right, people, good night. Stay tuned. August 1st, you don't want to miss it. Join us. Good night.
Ooh, man, that made me dance a little bit on the inside. You're talking about college football predictions. Ooh. All right. Thank you, everybody, for tuning into the show and downloading the link and listening to us rant. We'll see you next Wednesday coming up, Wednesday after next, sorry. Again, we appreciate all the suggestions and the comments that you put in there. It gives us good fodder for the show. We appreciate you, and we'll talk to you next time. Y'all have a good week at work. Y'all be safe. Good night.
Yes, sir. Shout out to him. Thanks for listening. Thanks for some good comments. He appreciated your comment, Rob, about Mello and everything like that, too. So we appreciate him tuning in for sure, man. But, gentlemen, have a great week like we talked about. Be safe on those travels, JQ, as always. Your boy's going to Jacksonville, Florida. So I'll check in with you guys as well after that.
You going to watch the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp play?
A little bit about that. I got a wedding down there, so I'm having fun, man. So I'll be traveling. So that's what we do, man.
Yeah,
so,
I know that's the minor league baseball team name down there, right?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, hey, listen,
Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp.
I'm trying to go watch the Charleston River Dogs if I can talk these girls into it.
Hey, man, you just got to concentrate on eating some shrimp and grits when you're in Charleston. That's the key
there
right now.
I love seafood. That is no hardship for me.
I love it.
Oh, yeah.
All right, gentlemen.
Shrimp and grits.
I'll send you a picture.
Talk like the Geechies.
Okay, see, come on, man, come on.
He went a whole other direction with that. Everything was going good. All right, I think I need to end on that note, man.
Charleston, y'all know I love it. I've been there time and again, so
I'll get in trouble. All right, gentlemen, so the next one before I get in trouble more, man. Have a good week, bro.
All right, y'all, I'll see you later.
Good night.
Good night, people.
Good night.